Production. Recorded live.
All right, so thank you for joining us to the first ever Avoiding the Drop podcast. I think we're going to call it the Dropcast. I don't know. Maybe we'll come up with a better name for it than that. I am Two Yellows Equals Red, or otherwise known as Jack Pierce in real life. I have with me today two of our fantastic writers, and they are Mike Georgia and our good
Hello.
Friend, and our good friend, Illustrated Example, Adam. I don't know if you want to give your last name, Adam, due to the whole court case thing or whatever, but
keep myself hidden for now, you know.
Right, exactly. So, so we're going to talk about a few things today here for you. And the first thing is, it's Tuesday, Champions League match day 3, and we had 8 matches today, so we thought we'd talk about that for a bit. I guess first and foremost, Chelsea played first this afternoon, went to Luzhniki, where they, of course, lost famously to Manchester United a few years ago. And managed to beat Spartak Moscow 2-0 on goals behind goals from Yuri Zhirkov and Nicholas Anelka. Did you guys get to see any of that match?
I did not. I've seen the highlights, but I was at work this morning, and I always forget when there's a game in Russia that starts early. But I caught the Zhirkov goal and the Anelka goal. The Zhirkov goal was incredible.
Yeah, I was able to catch kind of the last little part of it. I mean, I kind of expected Chelsea to take that one, but nothing too surprising.
Yeah, it felt a bit paint by the numbers for me for Chelsea. I thought, they were good. And I think, anytime they can win a match without Drogba being around, in that format, I think I thought they looked good. I mean, but nothing special. And I guess they're used to the playing on that plastic pitch or whatever from playing there a few years ago, but nothing. I just wasn't, I didn't look at it and go, my God, they dominated or anything like that. So, and then the other game in that group today, Marseille beats Zelina 1-0 on a goal behind a goal from Suleiman Diawara. I didn't see any of it. I don't know if you guys did. But,
I saw about 30 seconds of it when I was watching the simulcast when they showed his goal, but that was about it. That was pretty close to the bottom on the list of the games I was trying to watch today.
Yeah, same for me. I had there were plenty of other matches, and yeah, I saw.
Yeah, that
minute or two of it.
Yeah, that makes it looks like from the table now that Marseille gets their first 3 points. And I guess it sort of sets up now, them and Spartak for second place in that group coming out of it. So I guess we'll see what happens with that. Group E, a couple of interesting results here. I know, Mike, you want to talk about the Bayern Munich Cluj game. And Basel actually upsets AS Roma 3-1. I know they were talking on Twitter about how Basel had beat Roma in last year's Europa Cup, so I guess this isn't that much of an upset. I guess I looked at it as an upset. But any thoughts on either one of these two matches?
I turned on the Bayern game about the 35-minute mark and then watched it up until about the 80th minute. And Bayern won 3-1. Cluj went up early, but all three goals from Bayern, the first two did go down as own goals, and I think the third one should too. They were all very avoidable. Two of them literally went right through the keeper's legs while he was standing just flat-footed and basically looking down. So it wasn't exactly a trademark performance. I mean, they dominated the second half, but their finishing relied a bit on the incompetence of the Clues goalkeeper and defenders. But they were playing without their two best players, obviously. And Gomez was playing well, and he got credit for the third goal, but they were also fairly wasteful of some chances. But I'm sure last year they kind of lucked their way through a few rounds, and I'm sure they'll be happy with the result at this point. But that was the one that I watched the most of today.
Yeah, I watched a bit of the Roma game, and Roma just did not seem very into it, and Basel seemed to just kind of knock him around the pitch. But I mean, Roma's not doing so well just this whole season, so I don't think it's too big of an upset, but it's definitely, I think it's probably the only upset of the day. So
yeah, I was just surprised at the scoreline being what it was in their stadium. I mean, I didn't see any of it. I saw, as I told Mike earlier, I saw most of the Arsenal match, and then I watched the end of Madrid and Milan. But I sort of thought that one. That scoreline surprised me in their stadium. But, you know, when you look at the table now for that group, the funny thing is Munich is sitting on 9 points, 3 wins, no losses, no draws. And the other three teams, Roma, Basel, and Cluj, all on 3 points, all with one victory, no draws and 2 losses apiece. So it's going to be a real shootout as far as how that one ends up, I think, moving forward, because you know, you've got the opposite matchups next week because they turn the corner and go back. So they play these games again at the opposite stadium. So it'd be interesting to see, obviously, if Roma can maybe fuck it up a little bit on the road and maybe get it together a bit. Because I think when the draw came out, I think everybody would have looked at that and thought that they would be second favorite in that group. But, you know, as of now, on goal differential, they stand last. So it's going to be a fight for them to get out of this group, I think. So, and then group, we've spoken about ENF. Group G, we had Real Madrid and AC Milan, which I guess everybody would pretty much say was the big time showcase match for today. 2-0 to Madrid on goals 30 seconds apart from Cristiano Ronaldo and Mesut Ozil. And then the other match was Ajax 2, Auxerre 1, with 3 red cards, including one where a player was sent off from the bench, one each for the outfield players, including our old friend Andre Ouya, who I believe made his bones in the Premier League at Aston Villa. But yeah, some interesting results there, I would say.
Yeah, apparently the guy who got sent off for Auxerre was warming up to come on. He was waiting to come on and started talking trash to the fourth official, and he just straight up sent him off. So that's pretty impressive. I mean, I know that's not the first time that's happened, but it's still rare to see in this competition. So, but yeah, I watched the first half. I watched Real and Milan for the most part until it got a little bit out of hand, and I turned over to Munich. But those goals were, I mean, Ronaldo's goal was absolutely gorgeous free kick. Just, I forget who brought him down, but somebody brought down Alonso right on about the 23-meter mark, and Ronaldo just blasted it right through the wall, and just the keeper had no chance. And then the next possession, Ronaldo just dinks in a great cross. Ozil just gets, half volley on it almost, and I think it would have gone in anyways, but it just hits the defender and just loops, one of those where you can just tell everyone is stopping and can see it moving in slow motion, but the goalkeeper can't do anything about it. And they probably should have had 4 in the first half, but Milan came alive towards the end. But that was a pretty classic Jose Mourinho team performance.
Yeah, I think that group gets pretty interesting if Madrid wins the next one against Milan, and Ajax can pull another one off against Auxerre. because that'll put Ajax at 7 points, Milan at 4 points, and then Ajax will get to play Milan. So when those two meet up, that one could be for second place in the group, so that could be quite interesting.
Yeah, and I don't think most people, when that draw came out, would have said that Ajax were favorites for second place. So that'll be, with their struggles in Europe the last few seasons, that'll be a big boon for them. But it'll be interesting. I mean, Milan's today, I mean, even though they gave up two and could have been up more, Marco Emilio made his debut playing keeper, well, you know, at the Bernabeu in the Champions League. And he actually played very well. So it'll be interesting to see if he holds down the spot for the next game. See, he's not, you know, 19 or anything. He's in his late 20s and he's in on loan. But it was still an impressive performance. So that's going to be, the marquee matchup again. So hopefully, if Milan win, it'll make the group more interesting. So I kind of hope that happens.
Yeah, I turned it on after Arsenal went up 4-0, and it looked a bit dire for me for Milan's sake. I know the announcers were having a bit of a go at Ronaldinho, and not that that's really doing much as far as really going out on a limb at this point, because everybody's had a go at Ronaldinho, including us on our website. But I mean, it's a shame, really. I think how they've let that squad age to the point where they still rely on Inzaghi and
Pirlo, Gattuso.
Yeah, Pirlo, the midfielder, Gattuso, and it's, Ronaldinho, who's now a shell of what he once was. And it's sort of a shame, but, it's funny, Mike, you had tweeted that who forgot that Robinho was on that team, and I know, quite frankly, I had forgotten that he had gone
there. Yeah, I was shocked when he said Robinho. I was like, that can't be right. Oh, wait, yeah, he did. And he did. I don't think he did a whole lot, but he's already scored one goal for them, I guess. But it's sad. I mean, they do have some. Seedorf is old, but he's still. I think he's aging the best out of them. But Ibrahimovic and Pato have actually been playing very well together. And just after those two goals, it kind of just took Milan out of the game, and they were. They didn't really look likely to come back. But I watched them over the weekend, and that strike partnership looked incredible. It looked good earlier in the season too. So if they had, who knows, maybe if they still had Gourcuff, then that they would have a bit of a more energetic midfield right now. And they do still have Flamini, I guess, but I don't think he's getting much time there either. So it's an interesting team to watch this year, and the next game is going to be great.
Yeah, it should be. Finally, Group H, we can pretty much, give this group to Arsenal at this point. It was 5-1 today at the Emirates over Donetsk. With the goal late for Donetsk coming from Eduardo, who got a very nice hand from the Emirates crowd when he came on at about the 65-minute mark. And it was nice to see. I know Andy Gray had a bit of a go at him in terms of saying that he was not an Arsenal legend, but was appreciated for the time that he put in, and he's coming back from the broken leg, and so it was nice to see him play. And I know the Donetsk kits are very nice. Unfortunately, that's about the best thing I can say for them. And then the other game in that group, Braga 2 to Partizan Belgrade 0, and that is probably it for Belgrade as far as a chance to move forward, but the other spot looks like it's going to come down to Donetsk and Braga. Braga got their first win today, and Donetsk on 6 points, but Braga with a lot of work to do because they had -7 goal differential and 3 points. So any thoughts on either one of those matches?
Well, I guess I'm the only non-Arsenal fan who watched the Arsenal game, but I turned it off after halftime just to watch Bayern, but they looked good. They could have scored several early on if Schamach had converted a few perfect crosses that he just could not get on the end of with his head, which is kind of shocking to see. But, you know, I guess, you know, Wilshire had a goal at the end and had another very dirty tackle. And, you know, if they got, it was nice. I didn't see the Eduardo goal, but that was nice to see. And that was a really unnecessary thing of Andy Gray to say about him, to bring up that he wasn't a legend. But, you know, it's still that is classy on both sides. So, you know, good for them. And, you know, they've Shakhtar's clear favorites, I think, at this point to go through in second. But, you know, they kind of assume they probably will struggle to get a point off of Arsenal at home. But they're going to be clear favorites in their other two matches. So I don't think they'll see the 5-1 as a bad result, but they still should be pretty confident about where they are in the group.
Yeah, I would agree. I don't think that, obviously, Partizan Belgrade has almost zero chance, and I'd say Braga needs kind of a miracle to get past Shakhtar. So I think the group's pretty well locked up, but it seems Arsenal's been getting and I can't complain, but they've been getting ridiculously easy groups the last few years, and thinking this might be another possible early exit for them in the knockout round.
Well, you never know. I mean, I guess they do have one of the easier groups, but with the format change, I think there's going to be more favorable matchups for the big teams in the knockout rounds this year, just because you're going to have teams like you're going to have a team like Rangers. You might have, you know, a team like Cluj could get through, and those are going to be, I think you'd rather see those than some of the other. In the past, if you see someone like PSV Eindhoven in the knockouts, that would be an easy draw. So the new format is making it a little bit more interesting. So you never know.
Very true.
But then I guess we have the games tomorrow too. So that's,
yeah.
Few interesting ones there, too.
Yeah, I actually was just going to get to those. It's no early games tomorrow. Everything at 2:45 Eastern time. We've got, I guess it sort of depends on how you look at it, but I guess most people would say the big one tomorrow is likely to be Internazionale hosting Tottenham Hotspur at the Giuseppe Meazza San Siro Stadium. That is Group A. Also in Group A, Twente and Skede hosts Werder Bremen. And I think those matches, when you look at Group A, you know, Inter Spurs both on 4 points, Twente and Bremen on one. So, you know, I guess if there's a result between Inter and Spurs one way or the other, it sort of puts pressure, depending on what happens with Twente and Bremen, if there's a result there. I mean, there's still a lot to play for there in that group.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see how Spurs can handle going in to Inter, because this is going to be, I mean, they, you know, they had a tough away test in Switzerland on the qualifying round, but this is going to be something that they have not probably had an experience like in a while. So they're going to be going, you know, Redknapp's going to be going against a very familiar competition with the manager. So it must pain you guys to say that the big matchup in the Champions League tomorrow is a Spurs game, but yeah, this one's going to be, and frankly, I hope Inter just mercilessly thrashes them. Cause the taunting from Spurs supporters is getting, I can't handle it anymore. So, I can't have them getting through the group, but that's, you know, Inter has come alive in the last few games, and Eto has been basically scoring for fun, so it'll be that'll be a fun one. I'd like to see, and, you know, if Inter could win, but Peter Crouch could get a goal, that'd be nice, and I'd be happy. And the other one, you know, Bremen, I thought would have been favorite for second in this group, so if they can win tomorrow, I think they're going to be in a much better position, but it could be if they draw tomorrow, they're going to be up against a wall, I think. So they're going on the road. It's going to be a tough one.
Yeah, I mean, the Spurs match will definitely be interesting. I don't think they're going to be behind the ball too much. I think they'll try to try to go at it, at least early, and make it interesting. But I think Inter will probably probably just have too much power and knock him out in the match. But the return leg should be pretty interesting when they go back to London. On the other match, yeah, I'd probably see Bremen winning that one. But, yeah, not too much interest, at least from my end, on that match.
Yeah, the funny thing about Spurs tomorrow, you know, when you look at the schedule for the group stage coming back around, you know, they play at San Siro tomorrow. The funny thing for Spurs coming back around is, you know, they've got they come back to White Hart Lane to play Inter on the 2nd of November. Then they take the 3-week break. They've got Bremen at White Hart Lane, and then the finale of the group stage on December 7th against Twente, which is at Twente. So, you know, theoretically, I mean, I would think that, you know, you can look at that specific set of games, and you can definitely see them, if they can get through tomorrow, even with a point, giving them 5, I think points, it seems like a lot of teams have a tough time coming to London and doing well, so I think it's definitely a situation where they could be in good shape if they could get through tomorrow, even with a draw. So not a bad way to go if you're Spurs, as far as, you know, the trip coming back around, I guess, the schedule. Group B has Lyon and Benfica, and at Stade de Gerland in beautiful Lyon, France, and Schalke 04 hosting Hapoel Tel Aviv. And I don't know about you guys, but I always feel a bit weird when the teams from Israel come to Germany, but maybe that's just me.
I never even thought about that, honestly, and now that's all I'm going to be thinking about for tomorrow.
Well, it's a little bit different when they come to Bayern Munich, and so because of the whole Allianz Arena and the
yes
connection there. But at any rate, there should be two, I think, pretty good matches. The standings there, you know, Lyon on 6, Schalke on 3, Benfica on 3, Hapoel Tel Aviv not with a point yet. So it should be some good matches there, I think.
Yeah, it'll be, you know, you saw Lyon make a good run last year, and Bastos has been playing great. So they're, I know, personally, I think they're the best team out of this group. But, you know, we saw Benfica last year, or we being Liverpool, saw Benfica in the once and former UEFA Cup. And they, you know, they don't have Di Maria anymore, but they're still always a dangerous team. And, you know, I think that'll probably be my second go-to game tomorrow would be my guess. But, you know, and they have Rui Costa is still with them. So, you know I'll take their chances in that game. But the other one is interesting, but the, you know, Tel Aviv has not been performing well yet. So if Huntelaar can kind of settle with Schalke, they could be dangerous. And, you know, I'm not sure if, I'm assuming Jermaine Jones is going to play tomorrow. I know I thought he'd been booked at some point, but I don't think he's suspended. So that'll be nice to see him play.
Yeah, Schalke versus Tel Aviv should be interesting, since Tel Aviv sort of has to put everything on the line to even have a chance at the group. And Schalke has been struggling a little bit, so should be interesting. But yeah, I'd agree the Lyon and Benfica match should be pretty good, and if Benfica can pull some points out of that one, could make the whole group rather interesting.
Definitely. I the funny thing about the teams from the Portuguese league is I never, you know, really fancied them away from home, but I think Benfica has shown in this competition, at least over the last few years, that they're better places away from England. I don't know what it is about the teams that Portugal, when they come to England, but they don't seem to perform all that well. Group C.
And by the way, when I said Rui Costa, I meant Pablo Aimar. I always got them mixed up because I know that Rui Costa retired a few years ago and is now like their director of football operations or something. So I meant Pablo Aimar. Anyways.
That's fine. Yeah, no, I, you know what? When you said it, I thought, is he still playing? And I couldn't remember, so I didn't have a chance to look it up. So that's fine. Group C, everybody's favorite, Manchester United hosting Bursaspor. I'm assuming that will be probably a major walkover for them. But somewhat interesting match in Scotland. Rangers hosting Valencia. Rangers have done, you know, they seem to have adopted this, we're going to put everybody at the back, try to grind out points. And they actually stand drawn with United at the top of the group, both on 4 points, both on plus one, goal differential. Valencia, oddly enough, 3 points. They have the best goal differential in the group at plus three. And I'm pretty sure Bursaspor is out of it. But kind of a big match there in Scotland, I think, for the group. You know, assuming that United takes care of Bursaspor, I would assume that Rangers-Valencia is it. You know, these two matches over the next 2 weeks are very big in terms of who comes out of that group in second spot.
Yeah, I've been kind of hard on Rangers and the Scottish Premier League in general just for their abysmal showings in Europe. I mean, the fact that they're, you know, after this season, the SPL champion is no longer straight into the groups. They have to go through the third qualifying stage. And that's, you know, that's obviously a big blow to them. But they, you know, but I've been impressed with their ability to get the results so far. Even against a weakened, you know, somewhat second string United team at Old Trafford, I still thought they were going to get run over, and they didn't. So, you know, it'll be good for them, but it'll be, you know, important for Scotland's European coefficient if they can get through the group. So. I think there's more riding on them than there's a bit more pressure than usual. So it'll be interesting to see how they hold up, but that'll be Valencia still fun to watch even without their, you know, without David Villa. So that'll be a good one. But Bursaspor, I mean, they're still top of the Turkish league. So they're not really having a sophomore slump there. They're still, I think, 2 or 3 points clear. But they are continuing the Turkish League's pretty bad performances the last few years in the Champions League. So even without, if Rooney is too hurt, allegedly, to play, I still think that United's going to walk over him. So, and it'll be dangerous because it'll be a game for someone like Hernandez to get, you know, his feet wet more, get Berbatov back, you know, scoring again. So that one should be a bloodbath, unfortunately, but.
Yeah, I don't see anything from the United versus Spor match either. I think United will just sort of walk all over them. Rangers-Valencia will definitely be interesting. Interesting to see if Rangers will be able to hold Valencia off, or if Valencia can get through and get some points. And that home and away should. Probably, I'm guessing, determine who gets second place in the group. So, because assuming they both beat Bursaspor as they should on the return leg, don't know if either one could pull a result from United.
Yeah, it should be. I guess we're going to talk about Wayne Rooney in a minute, and. You know, obviously a lot to talk about with that, and I know you're both dying to do it, and we will get to it. I mean, as far as that match goes, I mean, I think United, you know, I guess it really depends on what Fergie wants to do and how affected the squad is by all this, you know, attention that the press is paying to them at this point in time because of the Rooney stuff. But you know, it's interesting to see how they do, because I mean they've certainly not done very well, I think, in the first two matches. I mean they played okay in that second match, but not fantastically. And I think it's going to be that group. I still feel like there's something weird going to happen with that group, and I can't quite put my finger on what it's going to be. I can't see Rangers winning the group, but you know, I wonder if United might be the English club to slip up and just struggle to get a second place finish. I'm not really sure. It's going to be interesting to see how that turns out tomorrow. The last group, actually something we'll talk about quickly because we want to get to the Wayne Rooney stuff. you know, there's a big match at Camp Nou tomorrow, and we haven't really, I hadn't really thought of it, but you know, FC Copenhagen actually is leading that group on 6 points, Barcelona only with 4. So it's that match tomorrow is actually for first place in the group. And then the other match, Panathinaikos versus FK Rubin Kazan in Greece, which should be somewhat interesting to see the Russian team travel to Greece. But Rubin Kazan on 1 point, Panathinaikos yet to achieve a point and a -6 goal differential. So they're probably, assuming something crazy doesn't happen in that match, Panathinaikos really need to win to have any chance. And obviously Barcelona will look to try to get back into form against Copenhagen. But should be interesting, I think, to see if Copenhagen can respond. I mean, you know, 6 points from two matches plus 3 goal differential, not bad start for them.
Yeah, they have some good strikers. The Senegalese guy, or second midfielder striker, Adama Ndoye, I mean, he's been scoring in bunches in the league. So they'll be, I mean, and Barcelona, you know, they won over the weekend, but they haven't really looked super impressive this season. And I think that they're ripe for the picking in Europe. I'm not sure if they're ripe for the picking at this stage, but if they don't win that game tomorrow, they're not in trouble, but they're definitely in trouble of not winning the group. So and then having to focus more on it to make sure that they get through. You know, they prefer to have their advance early or have it clinched up so you can focus more on the league and rest players if you need to. But with the league battle they're caught in, they really can't afford to slip up and have to invest more of their players at this point in the competition when they should have been able to coast through. So that'll be interesting.
Yeah, it should be pretty interesting. Yeah, Copenhagen, if they can pull a result, I think Barcelona might be in a bit of trouble since, yeah, they are in an actual heated league battle right now. So, and if they don't win, things could get a little dicey for them. So, I mean, personally, I hope they don't win, but just personal preference. So,
well, I don't know if you guys saw it or not, but Zlatan Ibrahimovic had a bit of a go at our buddy Pep Guardiola the other day. He basically said that he could manage Barcelona at this point. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to manage Barcelona. So I guess, I don't know. It seems like, it feels a bit different with them. I think it's going to be interesting to see how they do with this tomorrow because for once, I think the pressure's a little bit on them as opposed to their opponent, especially at home. So we'll see what happens. So, okay, Wayne Rooney, obviously big news today. You know, I mean, I'll let you guys go with it. I mean, it's, you know, the gist of it is, and you guys can start talking to the main talking points, but the gist of it is that Sir Alex had a press conference and basically came out and said, not only does Wayne Rooney want to leave, but he actually has not had a chance to talk to Wayne Rooney in quite some time. And, you know, I guess I'll let you guys have at it, but I wonder, you know, how is it possible that he's not just pulling him aside in the changing room and just saying, hey, can we talk about anything really quickly? Or, it was very interesting.
Yeah, it was. I mean, when the story, I mean, there have been, you know, rumors about him, about his contract for a little while, but Monday evening, I was sitting over at a friend's watching baseball, and I saw, and I was looking at Twitter, and a story from the Mirror popped up, and it was their world exclusive. They were the ones who, you know, broke the story with basically everything that has come out, basically saying that he hasn't talked to anybody and wants out, and the stuff about whether or not he's actually injured. You know, I was like, okay, well, maybe this will be true. There's no real quotes in it or anything. So then the next day, of course, United comes out with the, you know, all the headlines, United rubbish, Rooney quit story. I was like, okay, it's just more media. Then, you know, wake up today and it's this press conference. And it was weird to watch that. I mean, you don't, like, that was not a typical Sir Alex press conference. I mean, he was... He looked like he honestly looked depressed, and I don't really understand why it's happening, but it certainly is awesome for everyone else in the league, because you can't really think that if how much ever money they get for him. I mean, based on the precedent of the Ronaldo situation, he's not going to get all that money to spend. So this could be, you know, something very a switch in what United is. So this is definitely a dream come true, and not in a, oh man, United are screwed sense, but in a, it's like this kind of story is so big and it really doesn't happen that often. So at least people have stuff to write about for the next 6 to 8 months.
Yeah, it'll be real interesting coming up in January, seeing what they try to do with the whole Webster thing, since they're probably not going to want him leaving for just $5 million, as he can just buy his contract out. So I feel like, I don't know, he might end up going for a bit of a cut rate to someone, and United might have to sell to someone they don't want to. So...
Yeah, that's, I mean, you, at the beginning of the season, or really at any point, if someone had said that, you know, there's a good chance that Wayne Rooney would get sold to someone else in England, I mean, that's video game stuff. That isn't something that would actually happen. It was always, you know, if he leaves, he'll go to Spain or Italy and, you know, finish his career there. But the idea that he could end up at City or Chelsea is, frankly, it's terrifying. But, I'd much prefer if he went to another country, but that would just be, you know, something that, you know, we would expect the reverse of United being on the benefit of this in the past. But if he got out for £5 million this summer, I mean, and then could write his own ticket, that would be, you know, and obviously whoever he signs with is giving him that $5 million right back, or £5 million right back. So if they can't reconcile this, they really are going to be forced to sell him in January. And you know that, you know, if Madrid have the chance to get him, I can't imagine that they wouldn't. So, I mean, he'll be cup tied for the Champions League, but so what? It's the, you know, they want to win the league as well. And I mean, their goal is to get all, you know, in the Champions League, but because they've been doing so poorly in it the last few years, but if they can use Rooney in the league and not have to worry about playing him in the Champions League, then that's a big advantage over Barca. So, I mean, I think it's a perfect matchup for him to go to Madrid, but it still all seems a bit too good to be true at this point, I think. So I'm not counting my chickens yet.
Yeah, I think Madrid would absolutely be probably the best move, especially if the rumors of them wanting to sell Kaká are true. That'll free up some money there. Not like they need the free money up, but that would just open up the spot perfectly. And a potential swap deal too might be with Benzema, who's been rather unspectacular, be possible. But I'd have a hard time seeing United agreeing to sell him to Chelsea or City, especially City. Would cause quite a bit of uproar.
Well, how about one thing when they mentioned City, or when, you know, people kept saying, well, City obviously is a potential target or destination. We keep getting rumors every month or so about how unhappy Tevez is. with Mancini. So how about some cash and Tevez for Rooney? So then, you know, that would probably be the best case scenario, I think, for as far as player return goes, but not as far as selling him to somebody who's your city rival. But you get Benzema, and you're taking a huge chance because he hasn't, you know, lived up to his expectations in Spain. He isn't a huge guy, so you kind of you don't know what you're going to get with him coming if he has to adapt to England. So while it would be a disadvantage selling it to a league rival, at the same time, if you were to do a player exchange, you would have a much safer investment because you know what you're getting. But you know, if the shockwave it would send through actual teams in Manchester and teams just outside of Manchester, if this happened, that would just blow me away. I mean, this would be, you know, no offense to you guys, but I think this would blow away what Sol Campbell did. And that would take away the one thing that Spurs fans still have to talk about. But I honestly don't think I could that would be like Rooney to City would be the biggest, you know, transfer surprise ever as far as I'm concerned.
Oh yeah, it would definitely be just a massive surprise. Other thing I read earlier today too was Everton has a 25% sell-on clause over 27 million. So, and I don't know how it would work with swaps in the deal, but I'm sure United would want to keep as much money as they could. So if I think a swap deal might be the route they'd be looking at, since they wouldn't be losing out on a big chunk of money.
It's funny that you brought up Spurs. I have a couple thoughts about this. One is I think Wayne Rooney and his agent are looking at the coming financial situation with these, especially the Champions League sides, having to get their finances in order and their contracts in order. And seeing that this is potentially his chance to get a monster contract before these teams have to sort out their finances in order to make the Champions League, which leads me to who could he go to that is in decent financial shape right now? And the thing is, you know, if I don't disagree with anything that you guys have said. I think they're all very valid choices, Madrid, City, and definitely Chelsea obviously have the cash to get something done. And, you know, I definitely think he's probably going to go for less than what he's worth, you know, based on the idea that he can buy himself out and leave for 5 million. If he buys himself out. So I think one of the teams that you have to keep in mind, because Fergie just loves to look south at London, is Spurs. I mean, I know it would be odd to think of him going to London and going, especially going to Spurs. But if you think about the talent that Spurs have and you think about the weaknesses that United has, and you talk about a player swap and you talk about the idea of who they might get back from Spurs in a player swap for Rooney. You know, while I don't think any of Spurs strikers are in the same class as Rooney when he's on form, I think, you know, if you talked about players and cash for Rooney and you talked about maybe a Defoe, apparently, you know, all the dirt sheets always say, you know, Luka Modric and he loves Gareth Bale. I mean, if Redknapp was of a mind, and he offered up Gareth Bale and Jermaine Defoe and £25 million. I mean, I don't know if that's enough. I can't say. I'm just saying I don't think you can count them out because Levy certainly has deep enough pockets to make something like that. Now, the thing that he doesn't have, I don't think, is the ability to pay Rooney £200,000 a week, which is apparently the salary that he wants. So I think that is probably the fly in that ointment. I don't think Arsenal would even think about Wayne Rooney for one second because of that price. And I think City and Chelsea are the two favorites within the country to make something happen. So I think you guys are both right there. Madrid. I don't know who else would have the money. I don't know if anybody in Germany would have enough money for this.
Bayern would have the money maybe, but not under the contract would be an issue. But if they didn't have the money, I mean, an interesting, you know, obviously his stock has fallen a little bit, but Sir Alex loves Ribery. And, you know, that it actually, I think that the German league would actually be a great fit for Rooney. But, you know, that would be probably the only viable option there. But they also have, you know, several incredibly promising young players. So, I mean, would they, you know, maybe something like Ribery and Mueller or Ribery and Close or Cruz? I mean, it's, which would be, and then no cash. I mean, I think that would be, that could be a beneficial move for either team. But I never thought about Spurs, and that has just blown me away. And it makes sense. I mean, because Modric would be the kind of player who they're going to have to replace, or, you know, they need that kind of player, a creative midfielder. I mean, I don't know if they would so much go for Bale because they have Nani, and I don't think Bale is ever really going to be a top team quality left back. But that would be ridiculous if he, and it would be some sort of payback for all of the players that they have sold to them. But that would be incredible. That I honestly think, like, as far as a rival goes, that wouldn't be incredible, but just the idea of them selling their best player to Spurs, is something that would have seemed impossible, you know, a year ago.
Yeah, I think I don't disagree with that, and I definitely think the salary situation is going to come into play a lot with Rooney. I you know, he wants a lot of money per week, and there's only certain clubs that can pay it. And I think obviously with the Champions League level clubs, whether Spurs stay at the Champions League level or not, I mean, the thing with these English players, and it always strikes me that, you know, you have to think about their wives and whether or not she's going to stay with him or not. I mean, I don't know. I don't try to worry about all that sort of thing. But, you know, for them to take their kid to a non-English speaking country, it's this kind of thing has come up in the past. And there's not many English players that go away from England for that reason, and I'm not really sure exactly why, because I think learning a different culture and going to a place where they don't speak the language is a good thing for anybody, but it just doesn't seem to happen. you know, obviously Germany would be a good fit. I think they're about as close to England as far as the culture and the way they handle their overall sporting, you know, culture. It would fit. I don't know about Spain. The finances are so murky at Barcelona and Real Madrid, I wonder whether or not they could pull something like this off. I just don't know. But it's going to be this story is going to just dominate, I think, the headlines for the next, 3 months. I mean, until January ends. I mean, I'm assuming he's going to have to they're going to have to try to move him in January. Like you said, Mike, he's cup-tied with the Champions League, so if he went to a club in the Champions League, he couldn't play. If he goes to City, the ramifications of that would be so seismic. Tevez was one thing, but he was never really their player to begin with. But if Rooney went and was sold, I mean, you're right about the Saul Campbell thing. It wouldn't even be close. I mean, it would be. I know how all the Liverpool people felt when Michael Owen. I mean, and granted, it was years down the road, but Michael Owen now plays for United. I mean, I know how they feel about that, and it's not easy for them. But I mean, this would be, if he was actually sold under contract from Manchester United to Manchester City, it would just be amazing. So, all right, we got about 10 minutes left. Shall we talk about Liverpool or shall we talk about MLS?
I will defer.
Let's talk about MLS.
Okay, MLS. We did a roundtable at the beginning of the season on the site, and I'm looking at it now. And we made predictions for who would win the Eastern Conference, who would win the Western Conference, and who would be the champion. Now, everybody out of the six of us mentioned the Columbus Crew, except for Kevin, who picked Chicago Fire to win the Eastern Conference, and we all got that wrong because, as of today, it is New York Red Bulls on 48 points, but Columbus could win it if they win their last match, who against, oddly enough, against the Philadelphia Union, which is coming up at the end of the week, and so that could be very interesting. The Western Conference, we had Kevin predicted the Galaxy. Adam, you predicted the Galaxy. Mags had Seattle. I had Seattle. And Mike, you also had Seattle. So we were all wrong there. Fuse also had Seattle. We are all wrong there, as the West currently is up for grabs between Los Angeles Galaxy, Real Salt Lake. Seattle cannot win the Western Conference. They are on 48 points, FC Dallas on 50, but they made the playoffs. However, here's where it gets fun. as far as the champions go, I picked the mighty Chivas USA, who not only are not going to make the playoffs, they have the second lowest point total in the league on 28 points, which is less than the expansion Philadelphia Union. Mike, you had Seattle Sounders, I think a very good choice. Adam, you had the Houston Dynamo, and unfortunately the Dynamo not going to make the playoffs either. Right now the playoff teams, as it stands, Galaxy, Salt Lake, Red Bulls, Columbus Crew, FC Dallas, Seattle Sounders, Colorado Rapids, San Jose Earthquakes. Very heavily Western influenced playoff. And according to MLS, if the playoffs began today, your matchups for the first round would be Red Bulls versus Earthquakes and Columbus versus Colorado. And in the West, it would be Los Angeles Galaxy versus Seattle Sounders. And what that would just be tasty. And Real Salt Lake versus FC Dallas. So very heavily Western influence. Did you guys want to talk about how this season has gone and what your thoughts are on these playoff teams?
Well, yeah, for one, my Houston pick was that was pretty good. That was a quality pick. But, yeah, it's just very interesting that the Western Conference is, I mean, basically dominated this season. And you've got six Western Conference teams and then just the two Eastern. So even better chance to have a West versus West final, which seems a little strange, but it is what it is. I do think that Galaxy versus Sounders matchup could be highly entertaining. None of the others stand out too much as of right now. But we'll see if, I mean, you never know with a home and home how those things can turn out.
Yeah, it'll be, I was kind of surprised. I mean, obviously I picked the Sounders to win the West and win MLS Cup. But, anyway, they're still alive to, they're in the playoffs, so. But they struggled to start the season, so I was surprised by their performances. But you know, overall, I think almost all of us said that the most improved team was going to be Red Bulls. I don't think anybody saw it being that improved, but I think we were right on that. And I also think several of us took some shots at DC United, so we were right about that at least. But you know, I think it's going to be. I'm looking forward to the playoffs and. I mean, I try to watch as many games as I can during the year, but during the playoffs, I'll watch almost all of them. So hopefully it's, you know, so we get some of the good matchups and hopefully Seattle wins.
Yeah, the funny thing about this is, and Adam mentioned a potential Western Conference versus Western Conference final. And I mean, you know, I've gotten to see everybody come play this year at PPL Park. And I will say this. I think San Jose was, if not the best organized side that I saw come in, they were right there with Colorado in terms of their organization and how they played together. And I think they will be a very tough matchup for New York in the first round. I don't think that's a walkover for the Red Bulls by any stretch. I think they could really give them trouble if they are healthy. I think, you know, Red Bulls played, they played the Union this past weekend, and I was there, and the Union won the match 2-1, and I thought, the Red Bulls didn't do a whole lot to impress me, honestly. Now, I know it's the end of the season. I know they're in the playoffs. Thierry Henry didn't even put on a kit, to get onto the pitch. Rafa Márquez played, Juan Pablo Angel played. So they had a fair few of their first teamers, but they did not look great, and I didn't know, in terms of whether or not they really were, going at it 100%. But I thought, especially in the first half, they were pretty poor. The Union played very well, probably the best half I've seen them play all year, and scored two goals. And I think, Red Bulls could be right for the picking. Columbus was very good when I saw them. I think they would handle Colorado. They have the ability, I think, to score from just about anywhere. Columbus, and tough, too. You can tell they're very mentally tough. I think the Galaxy and the Sounders would just be a tremendous first-round matchup. I'd be very interested to see those matches, even though they probably wouldn't start until way past my bedtime. And Real Salt Lake, FC Dallas, both decent teams. I mean, the funny thing is, I try to look at this from the Union perspective because I'm a season ticket holder and I went to all these matches. But Salt Lake showed me they were a pretty good team. Dallas did not. I mean, the Union played very well against Dallas twice, so I'm not 100% sure how that will turn out because I haven't seen too much of Dallas other than those matches when we played them. So, last thing, and then we'll wrap it up. We talked about the choices for who would lead the league in scoring, and everybody was on Freddy Montero, who does not figure at the top of the list here. Oddly enough, it is U.S. international Edson Buttle with 17 goals, including a whopping 7 game-winning goals. Quite a season for Edson Buttle. And I know we want to talk about United States men's national team at some point when we do this again, but very interesting golden boot table with him, Chris Wondolowski from San Jose, Dwayne De Rosario, who's always at the top of this list, Juan Pablo Angel and Omar Cummings, all on 13. So Freddy Montero, I guess, injured for a fair few part of the season and didn't play that well overall.
Yeah, that was, I think we, if not all of us, almost every single one of us mentioned him at least, and I don't think any of us mentioned Buttle, so I think we had some for, I think, maybe Cunningham, but it's not super surprising, but I guess we just didn't really expect him to keep it going this year, but we just expected Montero to just find a ridiculous hot streak, but, that was... Yeah, I think, we had Robbie Finley in there too, Connor Casey. And, we were all wrong, but having it come from LA really, and the West is not really all that surprising. So, so good for him. It's, if he can get, he hasn't really gotten a full chance with the national team yet, but I do enjoy watching him play. So I'm glad to see him leading the table right now.
Yeah, he certainly, at the beginning of the season, certainly just broke out and was just scoring in buckets. He managed to keep it up pretty well. But, yeah, I believe the year before we were all very high on Juan Pablo Angel, and he did not produce last season either. So I don't know if this pick in the golden boot in the MLS, if we're just really bad at it, or if the MLS just likes to throw curveballs all the time.
I prefer to think that we're cursing them.
Okay. Nice job, boys. That's going to do it. We have to let Mike go because he's got activities this evening. I know I've got a few things to do, but thanks, boys, for the chat. And we will get this up on the site as soon as possible, and you will all find out how to listen to it because we'll try to keep doing these. I think it was fun. I enjoyed it. And we'll get other guys on. And so thank you, guys.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
All right. Have a good night, boys.
Yeah.
You too.
All right. Later.